Imagine being a king and facing an enemy that's about to crush you, and your advisors are giving you conflicting advice. Who do you trust? Well, that's the dilemma at the heart of today's deep dive. You asked us to explore the events leading up to the fall of Jerusalem in the Old Testament, specifically to focus on the book of Jeremiah chapters 37 through 39.
It's a story full of drama, intrigue, and some seriously tough choices. We're going to unpack how prophecy, politics, and human psychology all collided to bring about this pivotal moment in biblical history.
We're not just talking about the fall of a city here. This is about the destruction of the temple, the very center of the Israelite faith, and the exile of the people from their homeland. Talk about a theological crisis.
Absolutely. Imagine the questions this event raised for the people. Had God abandoned them? Was this divine punishment? Were the promises made to their ancestors null and void?
Okay, let's set the stage. It's the 6th century BC, and Jerusalem is under siege by the Babylonian king Nebuchadnezzar II. Inside the city walls, you've got King Zedekiah, a young and inexperienced ruler trying to navigate this impossible situation.
He's caught between a rock and a hard place. On one hand, you have these prophets of peace, influential figures, who are assuring everyone that God will protect Jerusalem no matter what. Think of them as the ultimate yes men telling the king what he wants to hear.
And then there's Jeremiah, the weeping prophet, delivering this starkly different message. He's saying that surrender to Babylon is the only way to survive. Not exactly a popular opinion.
It's important to understand that the idea of Jerusalem being destroyed was almost unthinkable for the Israelites. The city and the temple were considered inviolable, protected by God. But about a century earlier, the prophet Micah had already warned of Jerusalem's potential destruction if the people didn't turn away from their wickedness.
So there was a precedent for this kind of judgment. But it seems like no one wanted to acknowledge that history was potentially repeating itself.
Exactly. And that's what makes Zedekiah such a fascinating character. He's clearly wrestling with his faith, with his fears, and with the immense responsibility of leading his people through this crisis. He even seeks out Jeremiah's counsel on multiple occasions.
It's like he knows deep down that Jeremiah might be right, but he just can't bring himself to fully accept it.
Right. And that's where we see this pattern of seeking advice and then disregarding it. Jeremiah keeps urging Zedekiah to surrender, promising that his life and the lives of his family will be spared if he does. But Zedekiah hesitates, clinging to the hope that God will intervene miraculously, just like he did in the time of King Hezekiah.
So he's hoping for a repeat performance of divine intervention. But why do you think he was so resistant to Jeremiah's message? Was it simply fear?
It's more complex than that. There's a telling moment where Zedekiah confesses to Jeremiah that he's terrified of the Judeans who have already defected to the Babylonians. He's worried about what they'll do to him if he surrenders.
So he's more afraid of his own people than he is of the Babylonians. That's a pretty powerful insight into his mindset.
It reveals a fundamental flaw in his leadership. He's allowing his fear of man to override his faith in God. And as we'll see, that fear has devastating consequences, not just for Zedekiah personally, but for the entire nation of Judah.
Let's dive into those consequences. The text outlines 5 key interactions between Jeremiah and Zedekiah, each one highlighting this growing tension and Zedekiah's inability to act decisively.
The first interaction starts with Zedekiah asking Jeremiah to pray for a miracle for God to deliver them from the Babylonians. But remember, God has already told Jeremiah not to pray for these people.
Talk about an awkward situation. So what does Jeremiah do?
Instead of praying for deliverance, he reiterates his message, surrender to Babylon. He even warns Zedekiah that trusting in Egypt for military support is a fool's errand.
And this is where the military officials really start to get involved. They hear about Jeremiah's message of surrender, and they are not happy. In fact, they accuse him of treason.
They saw him as undermining their war effort and demoralizing the people. Remember, these officials were likely part of the royal court and had a lot of influence over Zedekiah. They were also probably listening to those prophets of peace who were promising victory.
So Jeremiah is stuck between a king who's afraid to make a decision and a group of powerful officials who want to silence him.
Exactly. And it gets worse. The officials actually convinced Zedekiah to imprison Jeremiah, throwing him into a muddy cistern. It's a pretty grim image.
Wait, a cistern. What exactly is that? I'm picturing something like a well.
You're on the right track. Cisterns were these large underground chambers used to collect rainwater. They were often dark, damp, and pretty dangerous places to be trapped in.
So they were essentially trying to get rid of Jeremiah, silencing him for good.
That seems to be the idea. But even in this desperate situation, Jeremiah doesn't give up. And Zedekiah, despite imprisoning the prophet, still seems drawn to him seeking his counsel again and again.
It's like he can't resist going back to the one person who's giving him the truth, even if it's the truth he doesn't want to hear.
Right. Their next interaction is particularly striking. Jeremiah again tells Zedekiah to surrender, emphasizing that his life will be spared if he does. But then he delivers this chilling prophecy. He describes the women of the palace lamenting Zedekiah's capture, saying that his feet are sunk in the mud.
Hold on, hasn't Jeremiah just experienced something similar? He was thrown into that muddy cistern. It's almost like a foreshadowing of Zedekiah's fate.
You're picking up on a key literary device here. The text is drawing a parallel between Jeremiah's experience of being trapped and helpless in the mud and Zedekiah's future. It's a symbolic representation of Zedekiah's inability to escape the consequences of his indecision. He, too, will be sunk, but metaphorically, by the weight of his choices.
Okay, so we've got this buildup of tension. Zedekiah keeps getting warnings, but he doesn't heed them. What happens next?
Well, as Jeremiah predicted, Zedekiah's fear ultimately proves his undoing. With the king paralyzed by indecision, the Babylonian siege reaches its inevitable climax. The Babylonians break through the city walls and Jerusalem falls.
I imagine this was a truly horrific event. What was the aftermath like?
It was brutal. The city was plundered, the temple destroyed, and countless people were killed or taken captive. Zedekiah, trying to escape with his sons, is captured and brought before Nebuchadnezzar.
So after all that, he couldn't even escape. What happens to him?
His punishment is both tragic and symbolic. Nebuchadnezzar forces him to watch as his sons are executed. Then, as a final act of cruelty, Zedekiah is blinded and taken in chains to Babylon.
It's a heartbreaking end for Zedekiah. He clung to hope, ignored the warnings, and in the end, lost everything.
It's a stark reminder of the consequences of choosing fear over faith. But even in this incredibly dark narrative, there are these glimmers of hope. The text highlights a few individuals who, unlike Zedekiah, demonstrate remarkable courage and obedience in the face of danger.
We're talking about the faithful remnant, right? These individuals who remain loyal to God, even when everyone else seemed to be turning away.
Exactly. And their stories offer a powerful contrast to Zedekiah's downfall. One such individual is Ebed-Melech, an Ethiopian eunuch who served in the royal court. He's the one who bravely intervenes to save Jeremiah from that muddy cistern, risking his own safety to do what he believes is right.
It's interesting that Ebed-Melech is a foreigner, not even an Israelite, yet he shows more compassion and obedience to God than many of the Israelites themselves.
It's a powerful reminder that God's grace and truth extend beyond any one nation or people. And because of his actions, Ebed-Melech receives a promise of deliverance from God. He's told that his life will be spared during the fall of Jerusalem.
So even amidst judgment and destruction, God's faithfulness and mercy are still at work.
Absolutely. And it's not just Ebed-Melech. There's also Baruch Jeremiah's faithful scribe, who risks his own life to transcribe and share the prophet's words. And we can't forget the family of Shaphan, the scribes, who consistently support Jeremiah and protect him from persecution.
These individuals, they're like beacons of light in a very dark time. Their stories remind us that even when things seem hopeless, there's always the possibility for courage, for faithfulness, for choosing to do what's right, even when it's hard.
Their actions raise an important question. What can we learn from their example? Why should this ancient story matter to us today?
That's what I'm really curious about. It's easy to get caught up in the historical details, but I think there's some timeless lessons here that are incredibly relevant to our lives, even thousands of years later.
One of the most important takeaways is the danger of clinging to false hope, of surrounding ourselves with people who tell us only what we want to hear. Zedekiah's refusal to face the reality of his situation, his preference for the comforting lies of the prophets of peace, ultimately led to his downfall. We have to be willing to listen to those voices that challenge us, even if they're not saying what we want to hear.
It's more about being discerning and critically evaluating the information we're receiving. It's like, are we surrounding ourselves with yes men? Or are we seeking out diverse perspectives, even those that might make us uncomfortable?
That's a great way to put it. We need to be willing to question our assumptions, to consider different viewpoints, and to be honest with ourselves about the potential consequences of clinging to comforting lies, just like Zedekiah did.
And on the flip side, we need to cultivate the kind of courage we see in people like Jeremiah, Baruch, and Ebed-Melech. They stood by the truth, even when it was unpopular, even when it put them at risk.
Their actions remind us that integrity and faithfulness aren't always easy, but they're ultimately the path to true freedom. It's about aligning ourselves with what we know to be right, regardless of the consequences.
It makes you think about what mud we might be stuck in today. Those situations where we're choosing comfort over courage or ignoring those hard truths that we need to confront.
What's so compelling about this story is that it doesn't offer easy answers. It challenges us to examine our own hearts, our own motivations. Are we driven by fear or by faith? Are we willing to listen to those voices that might be challenging, even unsettling?
It's a call to action in a way. Not just to passively absorb information, but to actively engage with it, to wrestle with it, and to allow it to shape our choices and our actions.
And that wrestling can be tough, but it's in those moments of struggle that we often find the most growth. This story from ancient Jerusalem isn't just about the fall of a city. It's about the potential fall of any of us when we choose to ignore truth, to prioritize our own comfort over the harder path of obedience and integrity.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into Jeremiah's prophecies and the fall of Jerusalem, what's the one thing you hope our listener takes away from this story?
I think it boils down to this. The choices we make, even seemingly small ones, have consequences. Choosing to ignore the truth, even out of fear or convenience, can lead us down a dangerous path. But choosing to align ourselves with truth, with justice, with what we know to be right, that's where we find freedom, even amidst the challenges.
It's a story that's both ancient and incredibly timely. Thanks for guiding us through this deep dive. And to you, our listener, we leave you with this question. What uncomfortable truths are you avoiding in your own life? What prophets of peace might be lulling you into a false sense of security? This story challenges us to wake up, to listen carefully, and have the courage to act on what we hear.